Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul MacDonald, alongside Deepak Gohill, Brian Davis, and welcoming one of our show researchers, Kat Victorino. Hello, ladies and gents.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we all doing after the Christmas break? Are we all fed well?
Yeah, I'm watered. Don't forget watered.
More than you're prepared to admit, anyway.
I'm waddling around my house like a penguin.
Oh, the images, more images of Brian in my brain now, not good. In what's become an all too familiar story this season, the San Francisco 49ers showed up this week, but only for part of the game. A Week 16 matchup at Ford Field against the 5-9 Detroit Lions saw the 49ers start off promisingly, scoring on their opening drive. It also happened to be their first offensive first quarter touchdown of the season. Week 16, listeners, Week 16. With that out of the way, the 49ers slowly began to unravel towards the end of the first half as the Lions took control of the game and never gave it up. Schoolboy errors, penalties made up the rest of the story for the 49ers in what became another humiliating defeat. Looking on the bright side, Trent Baalke will have a nice early draft pick to waste, I mean play with. Brian, what was the biggest surprise yesterday? The confidence with the 49ers opening drive or the speed with which they reverted back to form as the first half closed and into the second half?
I think it's the way that the team went completely downhill. I actually sat there at half time and thought to myself, well, that wasn't actually that bad. You know, we were quite good at times. And I didn't know whether the Lions were that bad and could we continue this into the second half. You know, have they finally made the necessary changes to start the game and their scripted plays are actually of use? You know, they've obviously sat down and studied video as to how to move the ball on Detroit. Particularly scoring a touchdown on our first drive, meaning that we've finally done it. Every other team in the league has been there and done that weeks ago, seemingly. So, and in the first half, I don't think we were particularly boring either, which was a bonus. Little did we know what was to come in the second half. I think even the 49ers' harshest of critics would have struggled to have thought of how bad could they really be in the second half after what looked like such a relatively decent first half, really. And if I'm honest, I think the first half performance led me to more questions than it did solutions. But right there, like I say, I was generally happy. You know, the coaching seemed to be okay for the majority of it. I was happy that Hayne was out there and playing and seeing the ball. We had good Vance this week. The O-line, they weren't too bad until that Gabbert fumble at the end. And the penalties were a bit of a pain in the bum, to be honest. But you know, at halftime, we were in a relatively decent position.
We all sort of went into the second half, or into the halftime break anyway, with that sense of this could be an interesting game. Was that how you felt, Kat?
Oh, yeah. It was, again, a fun first half. You know, you had that great start, that great opening drive, and then, it's, you know, flashes of brilliance here and there. Thinking, okay, let's go into the half, let's put it together, let's, you know, make a few adjustments, let's come out and let's pound the ball down their throats. And that didn't happen.
It didn't. The second half, the 49ers came out and it was just a mess. The penalties, absolutely ridiculous penalties. Did we give up over 100 yards again this week in penalties? I can't actually remember, but I know there was a heck of a lot of penalties there.
Just let me interject at this point. Penalties, right? Usually that's sign of a team with bad discipline, okay? And that's something we can control in-house, if you see what I mean. So if we're talking about penalties, I think it opens another layer and another level of discussion as to, hang on, why are we giving away so many cheap penalties? Because let's be honest, even under Harbaugh, we were giving away some pretty cheap penalties, and it's not always the refs that are calling it wrong. You know, I don't think the 49ers, as a ball club, have been disciplined in its correct sense since we last had a disciplined coach, and I'm going to leave that there.
There was a certain lack of discipline yesterday with all of the offside and neutral zone infractions. I mean, we had six in the first half. That's not been done since the 1993 Houston Oilers. They come up on the game broadcast last night. Again, it's just another sign that the product that we're putting on the field is completely unacceptable. We had another in the second half. It's embarrassing.
Navarro Bowman has said that He spoke to his teammates on more than one occasion, in his words, 50 or 60 times. Yet they kept on jumping offside. It can't have simply been an issue of Matt Stafford's snap count. Surely it's got to be something more than that.
They're not following the basics. They're not watching for the snap of the ball. You have to watch the ball. You do not move until that ball is snapped. That's what it is.
And there you have it. It's exactly that. It's a fundamental execution of not watching the ball. You don't listen to the count. You watch for when that center snaps the football. That's when the play starts, not when you think it may do. And when you anticipate, invariably, you're going to make an error. And again, this ties into what I said about lack of discipline. A disciplined football team does not leave things to chance. It leaves things to preparation and the way things are done in practice. And clearly, this is a team that's just trying to wing it, you know, and see if they can get lucky. But we didn't.
I almost wonder whether Trent Baalke went into the locker room at half time and stood there, because he's now a coach, obviously, from what we've read this week, and was like, hey, guys, you need to reel it in during this second half. There's this kicker. I want to make sure we get at the top of round one. So you guys need to tank in the second half.
Yeah.
That actually leads to one of my questions. Are some players actually playing intentionally bad?
No, I don't think the players aren't playing intentionally bad. We're just...
No.
It's a very badly coached team with very, at times, bad play on the field. It just, the players are reflecting the coaching staff for me. They're a poor bunch of coaches, and the players are playing poor, and they're reflecting their coaches, I think.
But I think it's also fair to say that they're not very good players either.
No, they're not, no.
You know, and that's one of the reasons why we are perhaps playing badly, are players who... journeyman have played elsewhere, never really been coachable as such, and ended up here. But I don't think they're playing bad deliberately, because they are professionals and they want to have a career in the National Football League, and they're not going to get it by playing poorly. So I think they're probably giving it the best, but they're just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these players are going to be playing for contracts with the 49ers or elsewhere for next season. So I don't think you could ever question a player not turning out and not playing to his... full ability at times. I just think that, like we just said there, we just poorly coached, poorly prepared, and just don't seem to be able to put it together at all.
Tackling again was an issue yesterday. So many broken tackles, half-made tackles. Was that down to tiredness? We had this with the Chicago game, didn't we? Where we thought, is the team tired with the flight out east? It can't be the same thing again, surely. What is causing this issue with tackling? Is it another thing that's down to coaching?
Yes.
Preparation, too.
And discipline. Tackling is a fundamental technique of playing defensive football, okay? And if you keep dropping tackles, it means your technique's not wrong and your fundamentals are wrong. If your fundamentals are wrong, there's a good chance that everything else is wrong, too. So there's so much work to be done with this team. So much.
Should we go to some of our listeners' questions that we've had come in?
Go for it.
Okay, Graham Ross, hello to you, Graham. We brought in Torrey Smith to be a deep threat. That hasn't happened except against Chicago. What's the reason?
Well, we haven't had quarterbacks this year who have been accurate, have we? Kaepernick's has the arm that can test defences deep, but he's lacked the accuracy, and I think Gabbert is the same too. Gabbert hasn't got the arm that Kaepernick has got, so this is never going to be a big part of the offensive game plan, sadly. They should absolutely try it at least once a game, though, because, like he said himself, he was used extremely effectively for Baltimore in gaining huge chunk of yards in that way. And if he didn't get it by catching the ball, 50% of the time he'd get pass interference, and we'd be, or not we, but Baltimore would be moving down 20, 30, 40, 50 yards maybe down the field for pass interference. We haven't had a quarterback who can throw bombs down the field in donkey's years now.
Gabbert has shown that he can do that, though, like in the game against Chicago. So he has got the arm to throw the deep ball, but they're just not choosing to use that, maybe.
Yeah, well, they're not throwing outside the numbers, are they? A lot of Gabbert's pass completions and the way he's looking, it's all across the middle, inside, dump-offs. They're not pushing Gabbert to see what he's like at that next level, and I think that just reflects on, again, the coaches. They're too conservative.
Keith Fish has been in touch as well. Hello, Keith. If we lose next week to the Rams, which is a strong possibility, it means that Gabbert and Kaepernick will each have played 8 games and both finish with the same 2-6 record. Would either of them get the start for next season?
Honestly, I think we would be better off going with Gabbert for a little while just to have that veteran quarterback. He's still too skittish, though, so there's... You know, when he's in the pocket, he just, they both suffer from the same problem. They want to get rid of the ball. They want the pressure off of themselves. The line doesn't give them the opportunity to get rid of the ball effectively. So they get nervous. They start to, you know, dink and dunk and try and make something happen and then make mistakes. I think in terms of experience, Gabbert would be good to go with just to get that draft, that young rookie quarterback that's got some skills that can learn from someone who's had, you know, he's second team now. He'll have a little bit of experience to draw from, to coach, to teach, to mentor. And then I think we really need to look at growing our own quarterback from the rookie ranks.
Would you keep Kaepernick in as the second string, or would you trade him out? And what sort of price would you expect to get for him if you did trade him?
I think he needs to be traded. I think he's lost interest in the team. I think he's lost interest from the fans. I think he's what we'd get for him. Maybe a fourth.
I'd say that's about right, Cal. Maybe a fourth. But here's the thing, and I'm completely with you because, you know, we're talking about the theoretics of football here. So you draft in a stud QB out of the draft. You develop him with an existing veteran, and you sort of, you know, show him the ropes and he develops into a football player that you can bring on and produce for you. Here's our problem. We don't have that type of QB that can groom a rookie. And failing that, we don't actually have a coaching infrastructure that would support and develop a raw talent into a potential QB. And until we get that part right, it doesn't matter who we draft. We could draft another Joe Montana and he'd end up the same way as Kaepernick and Alex Smith and whoever else. So, you know, our biggest problems are not who do we draft, when do we draft, it's who do we deploy and where do we deploy. We need to get some kind of continuation, some kind of consistency, some kind of robust coaching infrastructure in place that's going to be there for a while and is going to work with what we've got. And really, with the way front office is going, you know, nobody can predict how that's going to look like. But until we have that, it doesn't matter who we draft or what we do with our players. This is going to be a sign of the times unless there's a long-term solution in place. A short-term fix is not going to work anymore.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Gabbert next season. The Yorks are doing things on the cheap. One of the rumours is they got rid of Harbaugh. One of the additional reasons they got rid of Harbaugh was because a lot of his assistants and coordinators were paid too highly. So it's clear that they're in it for the money. They're not in it for the product on the field. They're in it purely for making money out of the NFL and everything else that goes with it. So Kaepernick's going to be on his bike at some point, either through trade or that they'll just cut him before the 1st of April. And yeah, they're just going to look to do it as cheap as possible. And I don't even think we need to draft a stud quarterback next year. I'm pretty sure that, you know, Gabbert can probably be some kind of bridge quarterback for the season next year. And we should absolutely draft a quarterback at some point, maybe in the middle rounds, and maybe even take a second in the late rounds or as, you know, as an undrafted free agent. But I don't think we're in place right now to be going out and drafting a quarterback in the top five of the draft next year, because to me, from what I've been reading, there doesn't look like there's a quarterback that warrants a top five pick next April, May time. So we should be looking at building the protection for Gabbert to be our bridge and potentially looking towards the 2017 draft as that may be where our, you know, a stud quarterback could be coming from. Or, you know, can they get like a Russell Wilson type in round three?
And that's absolutely right, Bri, because, you know, it has to be Gabbert because, A, we're not going to get somebody else in. And thirdly, you know, Kaepernick's position is now untenable. He even elected to have that surgery, which effectively cut his ties with the team, you know. So Kaepernick won't be coming back. And I think the only thing we can really do is manage our expectations on what the future really holds for this team. because there are so many variables that are in the hands of an organization that clearly doesn't have the competence to run an NFL franchise, that our frustration is just going to get compounded if we don't manage our expectations early. And this is a frustration of everything from a Super Bowl to nothing inside of 2 years is, you know, ESPN will do a 30 for 30 on this. You know, it's the best material they've had in years.
Yeah, and like we've said before, someone needs to write the damn book on what's going on now. You know, they need to have written it yesterday. We want to know. But we're going to have to wait maybe 10, 15 years before we find out the real reasons for what's going on right now as we talk.
One of the positive news stories from yesterday's game, Anquan Boldin, he reached 1,000 career receptions. It was his 185th game. That's the fifth fastest in history. Jerry Rice was the third fastest, doing it with four games less. Is Anquan Boldin going to be staying with us for the foreseeable future, do you think?
I hope so. He sure sounds like he likes the area. He likes the fans. He, you know, he enjoys working with a lot of the people that are in the organization. So I certainly hope so, but I don't know. I mean, it's everything's so up in the air with this organization right now.
I think it largely depends on what his long-term aspirations are. He's coming to the end of his career now. And I think when he came to San Francisco, he genuinely thought he had an opportunity to win a championship, you know, to win a Super Bowl. Clearly, that's not going to happen during his tenure as an active football player. Does he, A, want to just draw a paycheck, and an honest paycheck at that? He's not here just to make up the numbers, but is he here to draw up an honest paycheck? Does he think we can win? Incredibly unlikely. Or would he fancy his chances somewhere else? Would somebody else be willing to go for him?
Anybody but Seattle.
Well, yeah, these are professionals. They'll go where the paycheck is, you know.
Yeah, I can't see him leaving for somebody like, let's say, it's hard to find a team that's worse than us, isn't it, right now? Jacksonville or
Cleveland or Dallas. Yeah,
Cleveland,
right.
Or Dallas or someone. If the Patriots came in for him or someone like that, I would just say, do what's best for you. Go, you know, go and try and win a ring, because, you know, you deserve another one. Well, you deserve one. Go, you know, go and get one. And you couldn't. You know, you couldn't hold that against him if he did come in and, you know, if he did leave for that kind of team. But yeah, I'd like, you can see that he's passionate, because the way that he was upset on the sideline in the second half last night when he was kind of stomping around, and you could see that he was frustrated with what was going on, and that shows you that he cares. And at least, whilst it's not a good thing because we were playing absolutely terribly, at least you can see that that passion is there, that the players do want to, you know, that they do care. They do sort of love their teammates. They do want to win the games, and they're not just there because they're collecting their paycheck. And I think, you know, the Boldin is the prime example of a character that wants to go out there and isn't in it just for the money.
Mark Lyon asks, with the pickups of Sean Drone and Harris, would you ever bother drafting a running back again?
I think we have to ask ourselves a question here. Why? How did we end up with Sean Drone to begin with? Okay, and the answer to that was because Carlos Hyde got injured, Reggie Bush. Why did we hire him? Therein is the question. Okay, he's injury prone, he's never going to do much, and guess what? He's done. So we're panicking, and we need to find a running back from somewhere. And a bit like a quarterback, you know, we need a third string running back who could step up and step in. Instead, we had to make do with someone that we'd cut, shoved onto the practice squad and forgot about largely. And all of a sudden, we have an Australian rugby player as our running back. There's nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying that it's horrible management of personnel in skill positions, not being prepared for any eventuality. And, you know, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And I really can't say more than that.
I think we'll draft one again. It won't be a high draft pick, unless we're in a position in maybe 4 or 5 seasons' time when we've just won a Super Bowl and we're an elite running back away from repeating, or some kind of far-out scenario that's in a galaxy far, far away, to be completely relevant with everything in the world right now. There's been sort of far too many success stories for me with running backs off the street in the likes of Drone, and sort of you'd undrafted free agents, round 6, round 7 guys who come in and they're not spectacular, but they'll put up 1,000 yards and score 10 touchdowns. And to me, I think it's a big concern for teams to be drafting running backs high, and I think that's been reflected in the NFL draft over the last 3 or 4 years. I'm pretty sure if you look back over the round one, probably in that time, there's probably only been maybe 2 or 3 running backs that have been taken in the first round.
But don't forget, Brian, you know, the way the league is evolving now, it's very much a passing league. So people are going to be looking for stud wide receivers and a decent QB to haul the ball upfield. And running backs, the position of running back is very much becoming an afterthought now.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so I think there are great running backs to be had if you scout correctly. And I personally don't think you'll find those players in the first round. I think those players you're going to find in the mid rounds, or the fourth and fifth rounds, you're going to find these raw, talented running backs that people are not willing to take a chance on. I think that's where the untapped talent lies. But such is the league, and its continual insistence on aerial domination. It's going to be QBs and wide receivers, and the prototype tight end that Vernon Davis once was, you know, basically another receiver out of the offensive line. They're the kind of players that are going to go. And I think if you want to establish a powerful rushing offense, that could be had on the cheap if you knew where to look.
Yeah.
But he has to be a good blocking back, too. We have to have that to supplement the passing
game. Absolutely count. And I think that's the point I'm trying to make, you know, is that everyone's looking for aerial domination to be winners. But really, the tried and tested method of a smash-mouth running offense and a hard-nosed defense is a tested formula. You know, it's done. It's won as dynasties. It's won teams like the Bears and Packers. They played that way. A hard, good running offense, tough defense. The Giants did it as well, you know, in the very late 80s. So it can be done that way. It's just that people are choosing not to. And I think therein lies an opportunity for a savvy GM to think, actually, we could build our team around an offensive line, good running back system, and a mean defense. I mean, historically, we've always had a decent defense, you know.
Yeah, the problem there is we need to find a savvy GM.
Exactly.
Who isn't interested in also coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just been strange. Very, very strange. We're going to be going to our two-minute drill very shortly. Before we do, though, David Foster's been in touch with a non-49ers question from elsewhere in the NFL. What do you make of the Patriots overtime coin toss yesterday? That turned into a bit of a bad idea, didn't it, for Bill Belichick?
That was horrid.
If you didn't get a chance to watch the footage of the coin toss yesterday, whoever it was that was who was in the center for the coin toss for the Patriots,
Slater, wasn't it?
Slater.
Was
yeah.
it Slater?
Yeah.
The Patriots won the coin toss and decided to kick the ball and wanted to choose which way they were going to kick the ball as well. And the whole thing kind of went to toss, and Slater was like, well, what have I done wrong?
So the Patriots deferred the kickoff, okay? They elected to kick the ball instead of receive, and they want a choice of ends.
Yes.
Good
did.
Grief. I think the microphones. I think they might have cheated with the wrong headphones there. Sorry.
And it eventually ended up costing them the game as well, because the Jets won on that drive with a touchdown.
It just made me laugh watching Bill Belichick's press conference, and they just seemed to, he just kind of give them the lip service is, oh, that's what we were going to do anyway. We were going to receive, sorry, we were going to kick, and then we were going to get the ball back and score. I'm pretty sure that 99.999999999% of teams that win a toss in overtime are going to receive. And we'll see if Slater gets cut in the next few hours or so, shall we? Because the Patriots don't mess about, do they?
Right, it is time for the two-minute drill, guys. Are you ready?
Yeah, bring it.
Go for it.
Brian, should we see personnel changes after next week's game, or should the dust be allowed to settle first?
Absolutely, we should be seeing personnel changes. They're in the stadium. They should be told to pack their stuff while they're in the building. See you later.
EPAC, are penalties a discipline issue or an execution issue?
More discipline than execution. I think it shows a fundamental unwillingness to execute fundamentals. So yes, you've got both components, but I think it's discipline more than execution.
Kat, Hayne and Hyde, are they the duo for the future?
Why the heck not? I think they're a lot of fun to watch. I think if Hyde can get healthy and strong and have a really good offseason, Hayne gets some more reps in the offseason as well with the OTAs, I think we're going to have some entertaining running backs on that field next year.
Brian, should coach stay or go?
Go.
Deepak, are the Cardinals the real deal?
They certainly look like it. I think they're very, very capable, and it wouldn't surprise me if they went very far in the playoffs indeed.
Kat, the Panthers lost their game yesterday, the first of the season. Will they show up or slip up in the postseason?
I think they'll slip up, to be honest with you. I just, something tells me they're going to slip.
Brian, should the Panthers rest their starters for next week's game?
This is a real tough one. They probably should rest them. It's a really, really tough decision for me. I'm glad that I don't have to make it because I'm really kind of torn on it. Maybe they put them out there for the first quarter as they would in a preseason game and slowly start yanking them from there. I'm just glad I don't have to make that decision, to be honest. Momentum's a big thing.
Deepak, are the Patriots Super Bowl bound?
Yep, they are. Absolutely. And Angie Jeffrey's going to love me for saying that, but I absolutely mean this. I think Tom Brady's going to get his fifth championship.
Ugh. Yeah,
I know, but he's going to win it. And you know, and I can't deny him that. I think he's Canton bound already. Blah blah blah. But I think his fifth ring should be his eighth or something. But his fifth is coming.
Mm.
There you go, Angie.
Although if you look at the Patriots, they're I think they're 2-3 in their last five games, so they might be coming unstuck when it really matters the most. Let's see how much that Jets defeat takes out of them.
Yeah, true.
All right, time for our good, bad, and ugly, where we each pick a good point, a bad point, and an ugly point from the game. I have been banned from picking Bruce Ellington as my ugly. This is not fair. I think there should be a steward's inquiry into this, but we'll deal with it. Let's go with the goods first. And Kat, as you are the guest on the show today, let's go with your good first.
Well, I'm going to go with Jarryd Hayne. I like what I saw that first drive out of him. What were his stats yesterday? He was 5 receptions, 9 carries for 47 yards. Not spectacular, but fun to watch. And I think if he works on his fundamentals, he's going to be a good addition for the future.
Okay, Deepak, what about yours?
The good, we're coming to the end of the season and we can just put it behind us. And I absolutely mean that because, you know, we're just playing games because that's part of what you do in the NFL. You see the season through. Thank God there's just one more game left now and that's it. So that's great.
My good, the 49ers actually showed that they can play football. They had a good... Just short of a good half. And they put together some decent plays. They made it look like they can play football. Brian, what about you? What was your good?
Do you know what? I get a little bit of stick for being Mr. Completely Negative on this podcast. I thought that I was starting to watch individuals this season now because, let's face it, the team as a whole aren't particularly great to watch. I thought Ian Williams had a good game. Ian Williams might actually be my MVP of the season this year. He's been fantastic on the defensive line. And I just wanted to touch on a couple of others. I think Trenton Brown on the right side of the O-line had a pretty good game. I don't think there was many pressures that came that way. Certainly one of the ones that Gabbert got destroyed on, I think that was just a blown coverage completely on that one. But other than that, he stood up. I thought Vance McDonald had a good game. Harris, the running back, came in 11 carries for 73 yards at 6.6 a click. You know, you can't argue with that considering he was on the Ravens practice squad on Monday morning. And I thought Dante Johnson had an extremely good first half against Calvin Johnson. He held him to one catch for 8 yards. And at half time, I was sat there thinking, well, you know, like we discussed earlier, this has been pretty good so far. And there are good things that those guys equally took into the second half as well. So although the defeat yesterday was pretty shocking, there were, for my mind, some good things that did come out of it.
Let's look to the bad then, and let's go back to Kat.
Route running on short down on third. the receivers are just not getting to that first down marker. That's awful. Mm. That is sloppy play.
Also, on the opposite side of the ball, I noticed that on too many occasions, the 49ers defense was defending the 10-yard line or was defending the line to gain marker, not defending right up against the line. And we were simply allowing people to get to the first down marker before even attempting a tackle. Just not a good thing. Deepak, what's your bad?
Bad, gosh, where do I pick a bad?
It's the ultimate pick and mix, isn't it?
You know, there are a lot of bad things, but I do manage my expectations well, and I have done this season. I think bad is really that anybody who has us on the schedule, which is just St. Louis now, has no fear whatsoever and every expectation of beating us, you know, whether they be contenders or not. And it's been a long time since there's been a San Francisco 49er team that's going to be playing an opponent who thinks it's an easy win. To me, I think that is quite bad, because although we've been decimated by departures and injuries, etc., there's still the nucleus of a very talented team that should actually have an 8-8 record, really, by all accounts. So how can it be that that amount of talent is so underproductive? To me, that's the bad.
Brian, what about yours?
The special teams coverage and the penalties on special teams, they were just dreadful. They were just giving the Lions good field position over and over again. And every time your friend Denison had an excellent return, he lost that because there was a holding and we were going back 10, 15 yards, or there was a stupid personal foul on it. And it's just, you're just killing yourselves, guys. You know, the special teams coordinator probably should be on the fire with everyone else at the end of the season after this year, because the special teams have been dreadful.
My bad is the length of an American football game, not to watch it, just to play it. If the length of an American football game was 2 15-minute quarters, the 49ers would be doing really well this season.
Depending on which two quarters you pick.
we'll pick and choose those. But if the game is just 30 minutes long, the 49ers would be doing well. 60 minutes long, yeah, we can't play 60 minutes, forget that. let's go to the Uglies and Kat.
Oh, I have a list. Penalties. But the missed tackles really, really get my goat. You hit a guy, wrap him up, take him down, for crying out loud. Don't let him get to the yard, to the line marker. God, that was just ugly.
Deepak?
I have to agree with Kat. I think it's a combination of not executing basic fundamentals like tackling and horrible discipline in penalties and sloppy tackling. Sloppy tackling is symptomatic of poor discipline, which is a symptom of poor coaching. So take it whichever way you want to.
Brian?
I've got two. So based on what you say, I might have two here. The second half play calling was horrendous. The first half rushing stats were 20 carries for 122 yards. Really good. Well, I think we could all agree on that. Second half, 3 carries for -1 yard. How on earth is that acceptable at any level of football, let alone at the top level? It's just horrendous. It's just not acceptable. The running game was working really, really well in the first half. Why then completely abandon it when you're only 3 points down in the second half and then only 10 points down after the Lions got their first touchdown?
But we've done this for the last 3 or 4 seasons where we'll find something that works and then, we got to work on this because this needs to work.
Yeah, this has worked really well for the last 2 drives, but we better not do it for a 3rd drive. We might score again, you know, they might work us out. Well, until they work us out, keep bloody doing it.
And in the second half, we held the ball for less than 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a quarter of one half of a game, or an eighth if you want to put it that way. So that's your ugly, right? My ugly, and as we said, I have been banned from picking Bruce Ellington as my ugly. So, controversially, I'm picking Bruce Ellington's mother, I'm serious. Who decided this week to take to Facebook and start criticizing people who were criticizing her multi-million dollar pay packet son because he can't run punt returns back. Comments like, have you ever played football yourself and stuff like that. So that's my ugly. I didn't say Bruce Ellington, but it is Bruce Ellington's mum. It had to be done. Sorry, guys.
I just wanted to do another ugly. The quote from the press conference after the game, to me, sums up why Tom Suda shouldn't be, at this moment in time, an NFL head coach.
Yeah.
He was asked the questions, were the Lions a step ahead in the second half? To which Tom Suda replied, I don't know that they were a step ahead. I mean, obviously, they were a step ahead. That is an NFL head coach. And it needs to be said, yeah, as a defensive line coach, I love Jim Tom Sula. I loved his energy. I loved his development of players at that particular position when we got guys in. He would turn, like we said earlier, guys off the street in the same way as the running backs this year that we've seen, into bona fide NFL starters. And he was brilliant at that. But just as an NFL head coach, he looks completely out of his depth, and it does. I find it really, really sad because he does look like a broken man. He kind of looks befuddled and forlorn, and he doesn't have the answers that we want to hear at press conferences, and he kind of mumbles his way through. And I just find the downward slope that he's on really quite depressing. And you know, I just think that's a real sad situation for someone who less than a year ago was just so well respected and so well loved by all of the fans and by the players. I think the players still obviously believe in him, but I just find it really, really sad that we're in this situation where you know, someone's got to be Trent and Jed's fall guy, and it's a really nice guy who's probably going to struggle to get an NFL head coaching job again after this. And I mean, heck, the guy even started a conversation with me when I was stood next to him having a pee at the Grove in 2013. And that conversation went on for a few minutes outside of the bathroom. But, you know, that's another story completely. But he is such a nice guy. And I do feel genuinely sad for him that it's kind of come to this. And I guess we'll find out maybe this time next week or in a time as to what the situation is going to be for next season. But if it doesn't work out for him as head coach of the 49ers, then I truly wish him, you know, all the best for wherever he goes.
I know, Brian, but listen,
after
when he signed up, he knew this was going to happen.
I know.
He knew this was going to happen. He knew that this team would not have a prayer, and he knew that he was basically not being paid to coach, but being paid to take the fall for it. He knew this. So whilst I love Tom Sula, and I really, really do, and I want him to be successful, I actually want him to be our coach. I think the fact that he actually admitted defeat and got paid for it makes me think, why didn't you just stay as a D-line coach? Do what you're good at. You're not quite ready. Just man up and say that instead of taking such a huge salary increase just to be somebody's fall guy, which is effectively what he ended up being.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this also goes to show that Jed doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he's trying to run this as a business, line up fall guys. Yeah, but he did the same thing with Singletary, pulled him from the linebackers coach, made him a head coach. They need to have that in-between stage as a defensive coordinator where they're running that whole D before moving into that head coach. I really believe they need that incremental experience before becoming the head coach. And it's just, it is, again, too bad that he's going to take the fall for Jed again.
Yeah. I got just one more thing I wanted to touch on the game. I've watched a bit of the game back this morning, or this afternoon, and I just question some of the use of Hayne. They seem to use Harris as the kind of guy to bounce outside the tackles and Hayne as the kind of inside up the gut type guy. And I think to me, Hayne's got that explosive speed. And he's used to being evasive from playing rugby, you know, bouncing outside people. I think running Hayne between the tackles where it's more congested, he's going to be less explosive. And I think I'd quite like to see Hayne used next week in the way that we've seen or we saw Harris used against the Lions.
Well, this ties into what we've been discussing earlier with the play calling choices and everything. And again, to Tom Sula, who, besides what you were saying with him in the press conference yesterday, he was looking lost on the sidelines as well, certainly in the second half of the game. So all we can do is hope and see what happens in next week's finale game at, I nearly said Candlestick then, at Levi's Stadium against the St. Louis Rams. Want to say a quick hello and a very happy birthday to Lauren, who is 14. Kat's daughter, Lauren Victorino. So very happy birthday to you, Lauren.
Happy birthday, Lauren.
Happy birthday, Lauren. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
And that is it for this episode of the show. Thanks to our researchers, Gavin Sutton and Mark Lyon. Thanks to AudioNautics.com for the music. The discussions will continue on Twitter at Frequency 49 and on Facebook. Search the Frequency 49 show. We'll be back later this week with a preview of the final game of the season against the St. Louis Rams. It's time to say goodbye, boys and girls.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, boys and girls.
Goodbye, all.
On behalf of Brian Davis, Deepak Gohill and Kat Victorino, I've been Paul MacDonald, you've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.